Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome into the NBA Morning Deuce for Monday, March 22nd. And as you all know, Alex is off this week. He's on vacation. Lucky. It's lucky for him, but he is. He's going to miss maybe a crazy week. It's trade deadline week. We're officially now 3 days away from the trade deadline. And I told you I had a loaded cast of guest hosts this week. And why not start it off with the best of the best? He's a co-host of one of the best NBA podcasts out there. His name's Jabari Davis, co-host of Dunks and Discourse. Jabari, appreciate you jumping on with me late tonight on a Sunday night, man.
Joey, you are far too kind. I appreciate you, inviting me on.
Yeah, of course, man. So, a lot to get through. So, as you know, as I've discussed with you, what we kind of do on this show is we night's games. We run through the storylines from the games and the news from the day. Sundays are a little different because there's a lot to talk about from the weekend. I was planning, of course, on leading off today's show with one injury. Now we have to lead off with another injury that is, it's sadder in the instant that we heard it because he's out for the season. LaMelo Ball, we found out about now 2 hours ago. The craziest thing about this, he's out for the year. He has a broken bone in his wrist. He's getting a second opinion, but it sounds like he's going to be out. Just 2 hours before that got announced, the Hornets put out a graphic on Twitter with their injury report for tomorrow, and he was probable. Yeah. and now he's out for the year. It's terrible, man.
Yeah, man, sports injuries suck. And I know that's cliche, but that's the reality. You hate it for any athlete, but in particular, you really hate it when you got a not just a rookie, but a rookie that has, played well, absolutely in the running for rookie of the year. Of course, that's probably the furthest thing from his mind right now, but you just hate to see it. I hate that for LaMelo.
Yeah. And I guess it's probably an unfortunate part of just the way this works with the NBA and sports in general is my first thought was, God, that sucks because of how good he's playing. And my second thought was, has he done enough? And has he played enough games to lock up rookie of the year? Because obviously, I think a lot of people have talked about Tyrese Haliburton, who he's having a good year, but the Kings are, about as bad as it gets. But now Anthony Edwards is averaging 27 a game since All-Star break and had a game the other night, a historic game the other night, third youngest player to ever score 40. Has LaMelo done enough to lock it up? Or can Anthony Edwards, sneak in there the way the T-Wolves are starting to play at least a little bit better under Chris Finch?
And that's the thing, you know, some people may, think it's a, ill form to even consider it. But, the truth of the matter is this. If Anthony Edwards continues to play the way that he's been playing, and it honestly, it doesn't matter, how the Timberwolves, finish. When it comes to rookie of the year, we don't necessarily always take, team record into consideration. But if Anthony Edwards continues to play the way that he's been playing over this last, week or so or, a couple weeks, he's going to probably get that award. If he plays well and he's spotty, as would be expected for a rookie, and nobody else, really, places themselves, outside of the pack. Look, I would be happy for LaMelo, but the truth is, with this many games left, it probably, I don't want to say probably, it might not happen for him.
Yeah, I think one thing that could potentially save him, even though it is a statistical award, and like you said, that we don't tend to take records into it, is if the Hornets were to just absolutely tank right now, and they're a legit playoff team at the moment, and they've also become one of those league pass teams that you just kind of have to watch because they're one of the best clutch teams in the league. And that's not necessarily a LaMelo thing. That's a Terry Rozier thing. He's been one of the most clutch players, but LaMelo's been, since he entered starting lineup, they've been a legitimate playoff team. If they fall off a cliff, you might be able to say, well, the body of work before he was hurt and now they can't really get it going. Maybe that's enough to do it.
No, you're absolutely right. And if that is the case, I'm not wishing that upon, Hornets fans.
Of course.
I want positive things for y'all Hornets fans. But you're right. Like if they fall off a cliff and, you have at the same time, Anthony Edwards doesn't have to score 27 tonight, but if he doesn't stay at this level where he's impressing folks and grabbing attention and, doing historic things, it absolutely could happen. Honestly, it just really sucks, man. Like, because say it had been another 10 games like this for LaMelo, I would probably say, yeah, he's got it locked up.
I know.
But, now it's that grayer.
Especially in a shortened season. He only had to play a few more games. It's crazy. Yep. Yeah, it stinks. And by the way, you may not know this about me. I was a video scout for the Hornets for 5 years. So I have a very strange relationship to the organization because they were five absolutely miserable years. Because we were very, very bad. But I'm happy to see them starting to get things together. My time there was a little rough. And that'll also come up again later in this episode because that situation down in Houston is not fun. And that is, I'm starting to get a little PTSD just watching that situation. I know Coach Silas is down there too. The other big injury from this weekend is LeBron James injures his ankle against the Hawks. Looks like out indefinitely with a high ankle sprain. And more, obviously I said LaMelo's is right. The impact right away because he's out for the year is huge, but this injury, it's not often where there's an injury that has such an impact on the entire NBA. And we also, it's going to be so hard to even gauge what it really is going to mean because high ankle sprains are so tough. They're just unknown. I mean, it's weeks, months, LeBron's 36, but it doesn't seem like he ever gets hurt. So it's just like, how do we know? It's just going to be so hard to really gauge other than to say, and they're only two games from being the sixth seed right now. This could be a tough, tough stretch coming up here for the Lakers.
Yeah. And that's what stinks about it. You just don't know how long it's going to be. Like you said, the truth of the matter is this. Prior to LeBron going out, I was, my stance on anytime anybody asked me, what are your expectations? I said, if the Lakers are healthy, if Anthony Davis gets back, I honestly still feel pretty comfortable about them. Now everything's out the window. Yes, of course, if Anthony Davis comes back and he's healthy, obviously, that's significant. But if LeBron isn't 100%, and this isn't one of those where I'm trying to, project doom and gloom, for Lakers fans out there, I'm not saying it, but it has to at least be a consideration. If LeBron is not 100%, honestly, what it does is, everybody else that may have felt like they were, next in line or may have felt like they were within reach, they have to feel a lot better about themselves. So, it's really going to be a matter of, what's he going to look like when he comes back? When is he going to come back? What shape are the Lakers in? The Hollywood Homer in me, and I'm always upfront about that. Yeah. I want to say, hey, look, if they both didn't make it back, I feel good about it. I don't feel good about it. We'll see, but I don't feel great.
What is there here's what I wonder though. Like, let's say they will both be back at some point is my estimation. Obviously you never, I guess you never know with anything, but let's say, AD, what's this timeline on AD may be the end of the month, but we still don't know.
That's the thing that worries me. And honestly, when at the beginning of the year, like there were only about like 7 or 8 games in, and they mentioned that he had a sore calf, or you know, he was had some tightness. The first thing I said was like, hey, sit him down, because like, look, maybe it's PTSD on my part. I've heard that before when it came to KD most recently, and obviously watching the way that Kobe Bryant went down, that was obviously terrible.
Sure.
So that was my mindset. And everybody kept on telling me, they kept on poo-pooing it and saying like, oh, well, no, it's not that big a deal. And they wouldn't have him out there. Look, sit that man as long as you absolutely have to. They've been extending it like, 7 to 10 days, kind of, or 2 weeks, like every couple of weeks, as long as it takes, just sit him. Because honestly, while yes, I would love to see the Lakers compete, in this postseason, this is a 5-year investment. The man is already signed. You already have him under contract. I recognize LeBron, as you mentioned earlier, LeBron's 36, so you can't just like throw it away. But in my estimation, I'm looking at the forest beyond the trees when it comes to these things.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be the guy for the next 10 or so, maybe more years for this franchise if he can stay healthy. So I totally agree. If I just always, I keep wondering too, like, let's say they both do come back totally healthy, assuming they do later in the year, but they fall to 6 seed, 7 seed, because the West is pretty, it's pretty tight. How concerning would that be to you going into the playoffs? If all things, like for me, watching that team, see, even as good as the Nets are going to be, we'll see how KD is when he comes back. I'm assuming he'll also be okay. It'll take him a little time. But when I was watching the Lakers at full strength, there's just no impact. They're just impossible. They're the best team in the league. And it was almost to me like them and everybody else, and I include the Nets in that, even though the Nets have a chance to be an absolutely dominant type of team. So if they're all healthy and they're a 6 seed, I still feel pretty comfortable that if they get back to healthy, even no matter what seed they're in, it's just a tougher road, but I feel pretty good about it.
I'm actually right there with you, and the Lakers fans will like this. Like they probably hated the last 5 minutes, but they'll love this. The truth is this. This Lakers team, because of the defense that they play, it doesn't matter the seeding. It doesn't matter the seeding. When they lock in, when everybody's fully healthy. So, to that, if they are fully healthy, it doesn't matter. If they're a 6 seed, 7 seed, I honestly don't care. I would expect them to, honestly, whether it's have a significant advantage or at least, be the favorites in every series that they went up against, regardless of home court or any of that. If anything, and I recognize last year was very unique, but if anything last year showed, no home court, they fought, for the top seed or one of the top seeds, and they didn't get any of those benefits, and they didn't have a problem with it. So I honestly don't think it would be an issue.
Yeah, I think and then I think the biggest thing, well, and I agree with you, the defense, the listeners of this show know, that earlier in the year when I was watching this team, it was amazing to me that I was watching a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, some of the most talented players on the planet, the best player on the planet. And I loved watching them because of their defense. Like I was, they're fun defensive team to watch, not just team, but every player is a good defender and they play their asses off on the defense. Like when they lock in, they had that thing that championship teams have where it's like, all right, we're going to play 3 quarters and then, all right, now it's time. You're not scoring on us. It's just not going to happen. And that's fun to watch to me. I know not everybody loves watching great defensive battles, but watching the Lakers play defense when they're healthy is, it's spectacular. It was, again, they're here, they're up the top, and then everyone else is just sort of like, all right, who's going to lose to the Lakers when they're healthy?
Yes, I'm honestly exact same page. And here's the deal. If Anthony Davis comes back and he's healthy throw one out there. I know that LeBron is out indefinitely. I'm not saying it simply because he's traveling with the team. It also wouldn't shock me if he made it back within the next 4 to 5 games. I'm not the same way. It's not that I would be disappointed in any way if he did not. And of course, I respect that was a legitimate injury, but the guy to this point has been a freak of nature. And outside of the groin situation, 2 years ago, he's able to find a way to stay on the court. So all I'm saying is it would not shock.
Oh, and he also, I mean, as much as he continues to say he wants to keep playing this and that, I think there's two things. There's one, obviously it's towards the tail end of his career, but also, it wouldn't surprise you that if in the back of LeBron's mind, he's like, if I sit for 3 weeks, I'm not going to get MVP.
The unrealistic side of this conversation is that we expect these athletes to not care about these things. We expect these athletes to like, oh, it doesn't matter. All it takes, all it means is winning. Like, they're not human beings.
Right.
And to be honest with you, LeBron has made it very clear over the last week or so even that he would like to be in consideration for that. If I'm not mistaken, he said he felt like he should have 8 or 9 of them. And regardless of whether, where we land on that, I think we can all agree that he at least was in the running for a couple more. So yeah, it would not shock me if that, while the ultimate goal is more important, it wouldn't shock me if it's not at least a thought.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't shock me. Just the way he wants to be the best. He wants to go down as the best ever. He wants to be known as the best ever. And there's any little thing he can add to that, which is an MVP, because there's always, look, no matter what, that conversation is, it's impossible, because there's always going to be someone, if you say LeBron's the best ever, there's always going to be someone who said, well, why do you only win this many MVPs or what, so whatever. But he knows that too. LeBron, I say this about him over any player in NBA history. He sees and hears everything. He knows everything that's going on, social media, regular media, players, fans, coach. He hears it all. He sees it all. So he knows everything that needs to be done. And he knows what people are saying. And the MVP thing is part of it.
Yeah. You're 100% right on that. Look at it like this. He's 36 years old. I'm 41 years old. I came up and social media was there. But like I was later to it because I was a little bit older. He literally grew up in the social media era. Mm-hmm. So of course he's tapped in. Of course he's tuned into what folks are saying. Even if he tried, like even when athletes or stars or anybody tries to say like, I don't read my mentions or I don't care about public opinion. Of course they do. And LeBron James, look, you can't be on top of everything else in life and not be on top of what, at least be aware of what folks are saying about you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll see how this goes, but I agree. I wouldn't be shocked to see him come back early. Now the Lakers, as we're recording this, Lakers are playing the Suns. They're down 10 with 8 minutes left. If they do make a run, I got it up here. If they make a run and come back, we can chat about that game in a little bit. If they lose, what is there to say? They don't have AD and LeBron. So we'll see how it goes. But let's get into some of the games from tonight. For me, I want to start with we talked about the best team in the league right there. Mm-hmm. I guess the second best team in the league, you could probably make the argument. Some people might even say the best team now, the Nets. They get a win tonight, still no KD. They beat Washington 113-106. But the big story out of this game is that the reports that Blake Griffin couldn't dunk anymore have been greatly exaggerated. Blake Griffin makes his debut for the Nets, and his first bucket with the Nets is a dunk for the first time since December of 2019. It's unbelievable to me. I said it on here. I said it was going to happen. I think a lot of people probably assumed that this was coming and that he was doing a little, a lesser version of the James Harden situation, which is just play, but not play in Detroit so he could get somewhere where he wanted to be. And now he's going to be good. He's not going to be great, but he's going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been saying this. I think I said it on this week's episode of Discourse, but he's not going to like Mozgov anybody, but he's not completely dead. He's not completely done. And I saw it on the timeline. There were a lot of folks that, even Detroit fans in particular that were, of course, let's calm down. I recognize he hasn't dunked in almost 2 years, but the reality is he was injured. He's only played 19 games since then. So on top of not being healthy, you're exactly right. He's playing in Detroit. It was obviously over. They obviously had moved forward and they were planning on moving on from him. So of course he's not going to, of course he's not out there like busting his hump because there was nothing for that. So I, personally, while he doesn't necessarily address, the rim protection or the athleticism, like in the post or around the, around the court that they need, he at least adds, he has an NBA guy that knows how to play a game. And if he's healthy and if they can catch lightning in a bottle, at the very least, they've got another solid rotation piece. I'm actually hopeful for him.
Yeah. I mean, I watched that game, the 15 minutes that he played. He showed me some things that he brings to that team that they just don't have in the front court, especially when KD's out. He gives them another mid post option. a guy you can run offense through who's still, regardless of any of the stuff that he's not, he's still a very good ball handler, still a very good passer. Teams are, when they try to switch, he can take advantage of it. And on the defensive end, same thing. He had a play where he got switched off onto Brad Beal and he was great. And he blocked mm-hmm. his shot. And it was, so he did a lot of good things. Obviously he had the dunk was the highlight, but he did some good things. He only played 15 minutes. We'll see how, but, and then even more so to that, once KD is back, once they're healthy, it's just another player so that I don't have to play DeAndre Jordan tons of minutes, who's just not that great anymore either. Now you have instead of having one guy, one or two guys, you're now starting to put together a handful of front court guys that they can just piece together in situations. DeAndre, Blake Griffin, Jeff Green still playing minutes, but those will go down when KD comes back. And then Nick Claxton has emerged as he looks like he's probably ultimately going to be their starter. He's playing in crunch time and he's playing really, he looks like a young DeAndre Jordan a little bit.
So, you know, what's funny about, you know, look, and I mean, no disrespect to DeAndre Jordan, but the only reason why he's starting is because he's DeAndre Jordan. Like, and it was the same thing when Jared Allen was there, DJ can give you some good minutes, but you know, his days of being like a consistent guy that's going to give you 30 solid minutes on a night in night out basis, that's not realistic. And I agree with you. Ultimately, whether whether the young man starts or not, if he's the one that's closing, that's your greatest indicator of where I know this. The Nets. Let me ask you this: is any part of you a little bit concerned about KD? And the reason why I ask this, and much like it was with the Lakers, so Nets fans, this is your turn to be upset with me. Hamstrings are tough. And leg injuries in general. And, this is a man that has had some trauma to his legs, to his lower appendages over the last couple of years. Part of me is a little bit concerned about that. And I hope he comes back strong and has no issues whatsoever. But if I'm a Nets fan, that's at least in the back of my mind.
Yeah, it is concerning. And I remember when the injury first happened and the timeline was like 3 weeks. And I was like, no, what are we talking about here? Like, what? First of all, it's Kevin Durant. So you're not going to rush anything. Besides, even if he didn't have the old injury, this is like, look, the only reason people aren't freaking out about this Nets team in general is because in the back of their mind, Kevin Durant's coming back. If this team doesn't have Kevin Durant, they're just an average team. And I love, look, James Harden, there's the MVP conversation now because of how good he's playing. And Kyrie, I think actually I've turned a little bit of a page on Kyrie. He's playing really well. I've never been a huge Kyrie guy. But a lot of that positivity around the way all these guys are playing is because in the back of your mind, KD's still coming back to this team, and that's why they're a championship team. So, yeah, it is really concerning because those injuries. And the other thing is, similar to the way you talked about Anthony Davis's injury, because we don't – the hamstring is hard enough, but then we also don't know, is he getting a soft tissue injury because he came back at a certain point because of his other injuries? Is he still recovering from the Achilles a little bit and it's stressing out other parts of his body? That's where my concern is that I don't know, he was out for a long time, but I don't know how long it actually takes to recover from an Achilles. I don't know that everybody's probably different. Could he possibly be getting, putting stress on other parts of his body as to not stress out the concerning part, which is the recovering Achilles?
And that usually is the case. Like, you overcompensate because you're trying to protect that limb or that appendage or whatever, the area is. All of this can be for naught. So Nets fans, we could just be concerned for no reason and he's going to come back and look great. But at the very least, I think we're on the same page in terms of it's at least something to consider.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're playing so good and they're playing good enough. They're going to be a top three seed in the East.
Oh yeah.
But the KD thing will continue to be concerning until we figure out when he's actually going to come back. And it was fascinating. It's fascinating how good he looked when he at the beginning of the year coming off of an Achilles. So it'll be interesting to see if he can get back to that level, because that level was MVP level too. So we'll see. Elsewhere in the East tonight, I'm going to bring the Heat and the Raptors in here because they're both on losing streaks. They both lost again tonight. Raptors have now lost 8 in a row. Heat have lost 3 in a row. And those come on a day where report has come out that the Heat are going pretty hard after Kyle Lowry. So It's an interesting one. That's a name that's been out there for a while. And for Miami, the names that have continually keep getting brought up is that either Tyler Hero or Duncan Robinson has to be included. The Raptors are falling apart every day. They've lost eight in a row since their COVID situation. They're finally back to healthy. Like, everyone played in this game. They still got beat up pretty bad. These are two teams that, as we get closer to Thursday, it would be shocking to me if neither of them made a move. And I wouldn't be surprised if this is the move. So Kyle Lowry to Miami makes sense. Kyle Lowry to a lot of teams makes sense. But Kyle Lowry to Miami, who are now 28th in the NBA in three-point shooting after being second in the league last year, he just fits that. He fits the Heat culture, so to speak. I know he has a relationship with Jimmy, and I think he would immediately become the best three-point shooter on a team that offensively is hard to watch right now.
Yeah, and he obviously gives you a guy that knows, you know, that knows how to make winning plays when you absolutely need it. We've seen it for years with the Raptors. Obviously, most recently with, during the championship run. If I'm the Raptors, if I'm the Heat, there's no way that I'm even questioning. I mean, this is a yes. Oh, you want to give us Lowry for one of those guys? No problem. I recognize I haven't, I wasn't quite as high on Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero as a lot of folks were. Like, after the bubble, it seemed like there was a lot of momentum there. And earlier in the year, when there was talk of like a Harden deal, and I heard that they were untouchable, I thought, what the hell are we doing? Excuse me, I apologize.
No, you can say whatever you want. Yeah, it's all good.
But I'm saying, what in the world are we doing here? Why are we not making this move? Now, look, the Heat look, prior to this three-game streak, they looked pretty good. They were finally healthy. They were finally, they had Jimmy fully in the mix, and everybody was engaged, or for the most part, everybody was engaged. So if I'm them, and right now, if I'm not mistaken, they're sitting in the five seed, there's absolutely no reason why you don't make this deal. And from the Raptors perspective, I know that Raptors fans get mad when you say things like, hey, you know what, it's probably time to go ahead and embrace the tank, but it probably is time to go ahead and embrace the tank. Pick up another, pick up some assets from a deal, get what you can for Lowry, keep guys healthy, and pick up another really good, solid player in the draft.
Yeah, it's weird for Toronto. And I'll tell you, with Miami, I do another podcast with Norris Cole, so where we just talk about the Heat. Nice. And Norris is like the most positive person on the planet. He really, I can't get him. When I try to bring up things about the Heat, he's always like, well, nah, I mean, we'll be okay. Spo. So Norris, he's new to the podcast game, but he's getting into it. But even on the last episode, which was last week, he was even concerned, even during the win streak, about this offense is just brutal. He's just like, it's great that we're winning games, but they got to make a move. Like, the move has to, something's got to happen, because the offense, it's just bad. And they're so, a team that is so incredibly reliant on the 3-point shot has no shooters. I mean, even Duncan Robinson's not shooting the ball right now, and you just can't do it. It's not good. Kyle Lowry would be. Now, the tank situation in Toronto is interesting to me, because you're right, they do need to embrace it, but they also just paid everybody. They just paid Van Fleet. They just paid Siakam to be a max player. They paid OG Anunoby. Obviously, moving Kyle Lowry gets money off your books, but he's expiring anyways. And the other interesting one for them now is going to be Norm Powell, who on this losing streak, even though it's, they've lost eight in a row, the guy at one point on this streak was averaging like 30 a game on this losing streak, and he's an expiring deal, or he has a player option. So he's probably going to get paid this offseason. You can't overpay for Norm Powell when you just overpaid for Fred VanVleet. So even though they do need to figure out embrace the tank or a rebuild or whatever, I feel like this was the rebuild. Like, they kind of just paid their guys.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. And Raptors fans probably would, like I said, they'll be cussing me out on the timeline. Shout out to y'all. But I got to be honest with you. I look at this as, okay, say they were able to scrap their way in and get into a play-in situation, or like an 8 seed or whatnot. You're going out in the first round, even if you make it in. So to be honest with you, while yes, that might make you feel good in the moment, like, hey, we made the postseason, immediately afterwards, you're not going to be happy with yourself, because you're going to end up with a 16 pick or a 17 pick when you might have had the opportunity to get a five. Maybe this is a little bit premature. maybe in 2 weeks, if they're still in the same type of situation, it is officially time. But I'll be honest with you, I'm more of a like rip the Band-Aid off type person. So
yeah, and I think, and to that end, Kyle Lowry is probably the least of your worries when it comes to this deadline. Like, no one should be off the table. If you can get the right deal for Siakam right now, you should be considering it, because maybe there's more there. Maybe there is, but he is making money to be a number one guy. And I don't know. And I don't think it's like insulting to say he's just not a number one guy on a championship team. Maybe he could be. He's still relatively young, and he's at the beginning of he's just at the beginning of this max deal. So we'll see what happens. But you know, if a team's willing to, there's teams out there that are going to be, that have ton. I mean, the new thing in the NBA is hoarding first round picks. So one of these teams is going to be looking for potentially a player like Houston, OKC, New Orleans, like these teams that have 800 first round picks, maybe, and some money, maybe they're willing to do it. But I think if you're going to do it, if you're the Raptors, you got to try to move everybody. Like you just got to kind of try to start over. And that, I know that's unreal. Maybe that's unrealistic to say, but just moving Kyle Lowry and potentially Norm Powell, you're still stuck with a situation that's like, we're paying a lot of money to three guys that are going to make us a borderline playoff team.
So you went somewhere I didn't even have the courage to go. I would probably be trying to come off of that deal. But I recognize, again, if you're in a market that you free agents aren't necessarily looking to flock there, I understand maybe there's some hesitance there, especially since he's a homegrown guy. You had him, you know, you've won a title with him. The hope was that he's shown flashes. But in their heart of hearts, if they're being honest, they probably know this deep down inside as well. I agree with you. They should be looking for that. I just don't know they don't have the fortitude to do it. I just don't know if they'll actually pull the trigger. But I agree with you. Like, yeah, I think if I'm saying they should tank, I agree. They should be looking for any opportunity.
I tell you what, I agree with that too. But I will say this, there's a lot of GMs who would probably say, we're in a small market, we don't want to pull the trigger, we don't want to take this chance. I think Masai has shown over the years that he's willing to pull the trigger on, because look, he had a team that was two games away from the finals with DeMar and Kyle Lowry, pulls the trigger on Kawhi, and put that team together. That's a risky proposition. You trade your one of the best players in franchise history to go get a guy who you didn't know whether he was disgruntled or injured or what the problem was. So if he sees the writing on the wall, he's a guy who I think wouldn't be adverse to pulling the trigger, but it is tough to do when you just gave that contract. And also, is there a market? That's the question too.
I'll say this, and I agree with you, Masai. When I say like doesn't have the fortitude, it's not because I don't think he could. Because you're right. Was he also was he also the one that pulled the trigger on the Melo deal? From Denver, or was that the other person that followed up after him?
That's a good question. I'm not positive. I think he was involved. He was there. I think
memories kind of foggy. Okay. Yeah. So, but here's the reason. Kyle, who's the greatest Raptor of all time?
I mean, now it's probably Kyle Lowry.
So if you're moving him, I mean, you could do like an end of Godfather situation, the original Godfather situation where you just say, knock it all out at once. Yeah. But part of me feels like if you're moving on from Kyle, maybe that would be a reason why you get sentimental about, the man that some people call Spicy P. But, to your point, I agree. I think it would be at least prudent to consider that. At least see what's out there. And to be honest with you, Masai is good at this. I'm sure he's at least explored.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Elsewhere around the league on Sunday, I guess since we're talking losing streaks, let's just get Houston out of the way now. They lose a game that I really thought this was going to be the one. They lose their 20th in a row. They lost 114-112 to OKC, they have finally gotten to the point where they are essentially putting a G League team on the floor, which is what they probably should have been doing earlier in the year to capitalize on their 600 first round picks that they have. But now you look at this starting lineup that they're throwing out there now, and it's rough. They still beat Houston. Houston loses their 20th. And man, so like I told you, I was in Charlotte for 5 years. So I was there Larry Brown's last year. the Paul Silas year where we won 7 games.
Oh man.
The Mike Dunlap year where we won 20 games, and then Steve Clifford's first 2 years. So it ended. I left on a relatively higher note because Coach Cliff is, he's one of the all-time great people and he's a great coach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yes, I went through that 7-game season. And by the way, who was the coach of that team? Paul Silas, Stephen Silas's father. So Stephen, mm-hmm. I can see, like, I don't know if you got a chance to see the clips on Twitter of his press conference. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to watch, man. He was emotional. He was having trouble like composing himself. You could tell how badly he wanted this game in particular, but just as a guy who I know him, we lost 23 games in a row that year. When I was in that seven, that was a lockout year. So that was also a shortened season.
So it was 6-6.
That was, we went 7-59 or something like that. We had the worst, starting opening day starting lineup in probably in the history of the NBA, but that's neither here nor there. But as a guy in Steven, who also, I love Steven. I was so happy to see him finally get a job because he is a good dude and he's earned it. He's worked his way. And I think when he came to Charlotte, part of the deal was, all right, Paul's going to take over and then Steven will get the job. And then the stink of that season was so bad that they just couldn't give Steven the job. So, and then I think that stink was on him for a while and it took a while for him, even though if you look at every place he's been, he's developed. He was there with Steph early in his career. He obviously mm-hmm. was very influential in Kemba. Now he was with Luka the last couple of years. All those teams get better. He's always been good. So I was happy to see this. And now it's just hard to watch my guy out there. This is a tough situation with a bunch of guys that clearly you can tell that a lot of these guys don't plan on being there past Thursday and they're just going through the motions.
That right there that's what I was going to say. He's got a team full of guys that don't, I don't want to say don't care. Don't care about the long-term future of the Houston Rockets. And you know, some fans may be disappointed in hearing that or may think like, oh, well, of course, this is a reality, folks. These are human beings. And like, they're looking at the future and looking at, okay, I might be in Indiana or I might be in Memphis or I may be somewhere else, you know, within the next couple of weeks. It sucks, man. The guy, you know, 20 years in the trenches, if I'm not mistaken, you're like as an assistant coach, coincidentally, you know, one for every loss on this streak and hopefully knock on wood, it ends soon. I did see that press conference. I did see it. And you know what stinks, I love Twitter and, you know, I'm a part of NBA Twitter, you know, completely, but I saw folks that were like, oh man, it's not like the checks aren't going to clear. And it's like, guys, what you don't understand is while yes, it is amazing.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
To be, you know, like a head coach in the NBA, and those checks are nice. That's not the only thing this is. This is a man with great pride, and as you said, has been around for a lot of different, you know, he's been a positive portion of a lot of different careers. And, you know, to finally get your opportunity, and you have a roster where, you know, James Harden's there to begin the year and all of the nonsense that took place with that. And then, you know, you bring in, you know, John Wall trying to make it back. You know, he's been in and out of the lineup a little bit. You've got, you know, they bring in Victor Oladipo and that doesn't even fit. Christian Wood missed, if I'm not mistaken, 19 games and they lost.
Yep. That started the losing streak when he went out.
All of that is like the perfect storm. So yeah. For Paul, for Stephen Silas, I feel for him. I really, really do hope that this stink doesn't stay on him, even though we know a lot of times these coaches, you only get one or two chances. And the truth of the matter is, if you're Stephen Silas, you need to at least have this go right, you know, in some way or another. So I'm hopeful for him. But the truth of the matter is, for the Houston Rockets standpoint, I said this on our show as well a couple weeks back, and your Rockets fans got mad. This was before the streak. They need to be losing these games. So ultimately it sucks, but this is the direction that they need to go.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because I think what gets lost in all of this is that they've lost 20 in a row and they still don't have the worst record in the NBA. Like, they were actually playing some decent basketball earlier in the year, right? Like, they, Christian Wood looked like he's maybe going to earn that deal that he got. Cause I'm always skeptical of paying a guy big money when he puts up big numbers on a shitty team, but he came to Houston. They were winning some games. John Wall looked locked in. And you know, Vic seemed like at least he was going to play hard because he wants to get another deal. And it looked like maybe this thing, they had some interesting things going on. And a lot of this sort of coincided with them making the decision to part ways with Boogie, which I found weird. It seemed like everything seemed to be going all right. And then it was like, all right, or Boogie doesn't want to be here anymore. And I was like, this is weird. And then Christian Wood gets hurt and then it all just falls apart. And now it's just, man, the chip that needs to fall is the Oladipo situation. And it seems like they have been holding out and trying to get the most that they can for a guy who just doesn't plan on being there after this year. And it's crushing their leverage because it's the most, you know, it's the worst kept secret in the NBA right now. Victor Oladipo was not going to be a Rocket next year. And so what can you really expect to get for a guy like that? And that's, it's holding him up because they still want to get a young player or a pick that's valuable. And it's going to be hard to get that for an expiring deal of a guy who is probably only going to sign an extension with a certain teams.
And let's keep it real. Victor Oladipo hasn't looked good.
No.
Like, I mean, no disrespect. I'm always in favor of players bouncing back. I'm always in favor of players finding a lane after, you know, your repeated injuries or whatever the case may be, but he hasn't looked good. So if you're another team and you know, okay, I can get him on the low next year and just explore and see what's there, or I can give up an asset. Like, no, like, you know, it doesn't look like he's going to be that guy that's going to put you over the top for this year. So if I'm another team, I look at them and say, like, yeah, it's great that you want a young player. It's great that you want some assets, but here, you're going to take this from the bargain bin. And that's all I'm offering.
Yeah. It's interesting. And he's also been linked pretty heavily to Miami too. And they reportedly were also asking for Tyler Hero or Duncan Robinson. And that I think would be a little bit of a stretch maybe.
Yeah. As much mess as I talked or shade that I delivered to them earlier. Yeah. No, I wouldn't trade again. You just don't know what you got there.
I'm going to tell you what, Heat Twitter won't come after you for that, because if you saw Heat Twitter today, no one's off the table anymore, except for Jimmy and Bam. No one's off. Everyone has turned. Heat Twitter has turned on Duncan. Tyler Hero, I think there's still like a, you know, there's both sides of the fence because he hasn't looked very good either. But I'll say this because I worked in the league for a long time. I grew up in South Florida and I am a Heat fan, but I also worked in the league for a long time. So I'm not like the typical South Florida sports fan that I go game, like it's game by game, which I think is for a lot of fan bases, but you know, it happens down here. Like I think if you looked at Heat Twitter today, it was like, it's like they weren't just the hottest team in the NBA 3 games ago or one of the hottest teams. It was like, this is blow it up. Go get whoever you can. It doesn't matter. Just make a trade. It's like, let's make a trade for trade's sake. So that I'm just saying that to say, I think a lot of people on Heat Twitter are probably on your side where they're like, yeah, Duncan Robinson, let's get what we can get for him at this point.
Welcome to the party, Heat Twitter, then. Welcome to the party.
Yeah. Yeah, this Rockets thing, it stinks. But now there's two sides to it. One is, according to Tankathon, they have the hardest schedule remaining for the rest of the season, strength of schedule-wise. Yeah. But they play tomorrow night against the Raptors, so someone's O's got to go, right? And then Charlotte with no LaMelo Ball, and then back-to-backs against Minnesota. They got to win one of those.
Maybe
you got to win one. Now they've also just lost to the two arguably worst teams in the NBA right now, Detroit and Oklahoma City. So maybe not, but
I mean, there's always those matchups where, hey, someone's got to win.
Tomorrow night, eight game losing streak versus 20 game losing streak.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm not on tomorrow's show, because I really wouldn't have anything for that matchup.
Yeah, I'll just be celebrating. If Houston wins, it'll be a celebration. Get my guy a win. All right, we'll get through there's a few more games to talk about. Let's go Knicks Sixers. This is fascinating. You look at if you didn't watch the game, whether you watched it or not, you look at the box score and you're like, an NBA game went to overtime and the final score was 101 to 100. This is the amazing thing about the Knicks this year, is that they're actually kind of fun to watch, even though the basketball is not the most fun to watch, because it's just like grinded out defensive and then let Julius Randle kind of do his thing when he can. But they're really interesting. But the thing I want to talk about from this game was the ending of the game. We talk about it a lot on this show, the issues with the replay system that they have. And with 5 seconds left in overtime, Philly misses a shot. And Julius Randle maybe pushes Tobias Harris, maybe doesn't push him. It's could have gone either way. The refs call a foul on Julius Randle. Tom Thibodeau calls a timeout, which, if you were listening to the announcers, everyone was under the impression that Thibodeau was calling a timeout to review the play and challenge the play. The refs never challenged, the refs never reviewed it. And then the timeout ended, and because they used their last timeout, they couldn't challenge the play, and they never got a review. And then Tobias Harris made the 2 free throws, and then they also didn't have a timeout to draw up a play, so they had to just come down and chuck up a 3, and that's how the game ended. It was absurd.
So maybe you can, you know, shed light on this. I thought that in the last couple minutes of the game, and especially like in overtime, the refs could choose to, you know,
I'm pretty sure you're right. And I'm pretty sure that's supposed to come from, I guess, Secaucus or wherever they're looking at the replay. But I thought it could get buzzed down that, yeah, it's a view. But to me, that's even a bigger issue, that it's up to the refs to choose, because, like, let's just take football, for example. Every scoring play gets reviewed. There should be plays that just automatically trigger a review. And if it's 5 seconds left in the game and you're going to give a team a foul to potentially take the lead, you got to look at it. You got to look at it. That's what it's there for.
Absolutely. And I won't lie to you. I watched that game down the stretch. If I'm Julius Randle, I'm pissed, man. I get it. There was contact there. But again, man, put it like this. I guess it tells you kind of like where the refs see you as a player. Because certain players are getting away with that. Certain players, hey, no call. Go ahead. Yeah, figure it out, Tobias. For whatever the reason, Julius isn't getting those calls.
He isn't. And even earlier, it was either at the end of the fourth or in overtime, Tony Bradley tried to take him down with like an ankle lock. I don't know if you saw that. Tony Bradley was coming down clearly, like was not going for a ball or anything. Just grabbed his ankle and threw him down. If that was LeBron, Tony Bradley's out of the game when they replay it. They're probably kicking him out, but it's Julius Randle. And refs, I don't know how much refs stick together and whatnot, but now a couple nights ago, Julius went after Scott Foster, and, you know, I don't know how much that's going to start playing into his reputation, but who knows?
Much like I say, the players are human beings. The refs are too. Yeah. You know, like, and I get that. And I'm the captain of the, we're not here to watch you dogs. We're not here to watch you. But at the end of the day, they've got the whistle, and you can't, like, again, if you're Julius Randle, you got to find a different path. You got to find a different lane, because ultimately you're at their mercy. Yeah. And it really stinks. You know what really stinks? Like you said, the Knicks are fun again. The Knicks are fun. They grind, it's a grinded out Tom Thibodeau style, of course, but Randle's having his career year. Yep. And it's just unfortunate. Over the last week or so, the conversation has been about the disappointing endings, as opposed to, hey, look, the Knicks are still out there and still out there competing.
Yep. But you got to think, but if you're a Knicks fan, even with the endings, right? So like I said this the other day after that Knicks Nets game that had the bad ending and Julius Randle went crazy. It was almost the best scenario that could have happened for the NBA. And I say that because if the Knicks win that game, it's just a regular season game that the Knicks win, but they lose that game. And now there's a little juice, right? Now there's a little juice to Knicks Nets, and we've never had that. And they play again in like a week or so, maybe a couple of weeks. Now they can maybe flex that back to national TV if it's not already on national TV. Now you got vignettes of Julius Randle going crazy, shoulder bumping Jeff Green. And then if the Knicks win that game, now we're like, all right, we got an actual rivalry in New York, which we don't, obviously, because the Nets are a much better team right now. But it's still fun. It's still fun when there is some type of juice to that thing.
Here's one for you. Currently, and I recognize we still got some time left, they would play each other in the first round.
Oh,
I want that. I need that. Please let that happen. So I'm right there with you.
Yeah. And in a COVID year, they don't have to travel. Awesome. Yeah. You got to love that. You got to love that. Julius Randle, I'll say, I mean, I feel like if they make the playoffs, I don't know, just based on what I know of Knicks fans, he's probably going to be like, what, the third best player to ever play for the Knicks, according to them. Like, he's going to, the jersey's going up in the rafters already, right? Like,
you know Knicks fans, man. Yeah. Like, he already is in that spot.
You know what's interesting about him is, like, when I see him get angry, and I don't know if you noticed this, like, when he was a Laker or just having followed him, there's a lot of guys in the league, when they get angry, you're like, yeah, this guy's not going to do anything. Julius Randle seems like he might be a real one. Like, tonight he had his fist balled. Like, I was looking at the fist and his left fist was balled up when he was yelling at Tony Bradley. Like, I don't think he wants to get in a fight, but that dude took him down by the ankle. And he had the fist like tightened up, and I'm like, maybe he might want to do something here.
So his rookie year was the first year that I covered the league. Way back in the day, USA Today days.
Yeah, yeah.
Hoops World, shout out to all of those folks, the now defunct Hoops World. Julius Randle's not one to play with, okay? Like, for the most part, nobody really wants to fight in the NBA, but there's always that one. You know what I'm saying? There are a few of them out there. JR is probably, you know, on that list of guys. It's like, don't do anything dirty. let's leave the silly stuff out.
Right. Yeah, it's funny. It was interesting. I noticed that. I always look when those guys are going, like, what's going on with the hands? Like, I feel like I can tell, like, if they're just like pointing and like, you don't want it.
or standing there, like, you know, with their hands by their side, chest out. It's like, you don't want to fight.
Or not looking them in the eye. Just like yelling off to the side. Like, nah, you don't want it. You don't want that. All right. A couple other games. You know, we had Celts beat the Magic. Not really super important. Jaylen Brown looked incredible. Bulls beat the Pistons, not a huge thing. Last one, I guess, that we can talk about from tonight is Pelicans beating the Nuggets. An interesting game. This team continues to be the most confusing, probably the most confusing team in the league to me. You get 60 combined, 30 from Zion, 30 from Brandon Ingram. They actually play some pretty good defense, against a team in the Nuggets who had been rolling a little bit as of late. Michael Porter Jr. has quietly started to evolve into the guy that, if he becomes that guy, that team is very scary. But then in this one, no Lonzo. Lonzo sits with the hip flexor. Nikhil Alexander-Walker starts. He gets 20. They win this game, and I just don't know. I can't watch this team and figure it out, because, I mean, when they score the ball, they're dangerous. They've been so bad defensively this year. It's hard to really get a gauge on what this team is.
Yeah, and part of that surprises me, because honestly, that was the side of the ball that I was like, okay, Stan Van's going to get in there and get those, get those young guys in there at least playing some sort of defense. But I don't know either. The part of the conversation has been like the parts don't necessarily fit. Part of the conversation has been that, you know, maybe Griffin didn't do Stan Van, all that many favors by not getting floor spacers, around the two young guys. I came into the year thinking like, hey, yeah, I think that Brandon Ingram has at least a slight step more. And I think that Zion, obviously, if he stays healthy, can get, can be that guy. So why can't they be a playoff team? And all of the, at start of the year, it was like, okay, well, obviously I was clearly wrong. And I look now and they're not that far off from the playoff mix. So I'm totally confused by them. I'm a BI guy, I covered him when I was covering the Lakers as well. I want Zion, to stay healthy more than anything, because if he stays on the court, he's going to be an impact player. It's really just going to be a matter of if he can stay on the court. But I'm at a loss for, what to really expect from this team on a night in, night out basis.
Yeah. And I would never claim to like I know more than Stan. So Stan's got a reason why he plays Steven Adams 36 minutes, but he just doesn't. I've wanted this from game one. Mm-hmm. At some point, I would love them to have Zion at the five and just run, man, because they have the horses, right? When Lonzo's healthy, you got Lonzo, Bledsoe, B.I., Zion, and then put Nikhil Alexander-Walker or Josh Hart has played really well for them. If you're going to give up 120 a night, then score 130 a night and go small and just make it impossible for teams to guard you. Steven Adams' pick and roll defense this year has been, in the games that I've watched, it's impossible. And they keep teams just keep putting him in the pick and roll. And he's already not, he's never really been a great rim protector. He's just a tough defensive rebounder. He can defend the post, but like they can't switch with him. He can't, he has to drop so low in pick and rolls because guys can go by him. It's just not, but they play him a lot because Stan is still a stubborn coach who doesn't love to play young guys. And, you know, cause you know, Jackson Hayes probably should be playing more minutes for this team to see what they got. And when Willie Hernan Gomez plays, he actually has been playing pretty good for them, which is weird, but he's just keeps playing. Steven Adams, I think, is part of the problem. I don't know that he's the only problem, but if there's something on this roster that's fixable, that seems like an adjustment. Maybe not, you don't bench him, but maybe you don't play him 36 minutes.
Yeah, to be honest with you, you know, I probably watched 6 or 7 of their games in totality, you know, this year.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces of others. Every time I see him, it's like, yeah, this is a 19-minute guy, you know, a night guy. This is a guy that's, you know, your secondary big. This is a guy that you bring in, you know, like, you know, the change of pace, or like if somebody gets going in the post in the rare nights where someone does, you know, you can put a bruiser, you know, like on him. But if you are still reliant upon him for, you know, 35, 36, you know, upwards of 30, you know, 35 plus minutes a night, I've got to be honest with you, I can only attribute it to, like you said, it's just a matter of him being stubborn. It's just a matter of him, like, you know, sitting on the sideline, you know, like over the last few years, watching Steven Adams and being comfortable with him as opposed to like believing in the, you know, in his own ability to get these other young guys to where they need to be. I can't explain it for, you know, but maybe is it really just a matter of they just paid him, like, you know, because they paid him? Is that really it?
Because no, man, I think it's Stan. You know, as much as things change, and you know, he's been a commentator, so he's seen the league evolve and he's seen things change. As much as they change, they stay the same, and he's sort of he has his way of coaching, and he plays the players that he thinks fit his way of coaching. It just seems that way to me for Stan, and maybe that'll be to his detriment ultimately. But you would think with a team that lacks the shooting that you couldn't have two, sometimes three guys in a lineup that just are absolute non-shooters. And when Zion he's your best player, technically, I mean, he's going to be your best player. He's going to be your franchise player. He's never really going to be able to shoot the ball. You can't have another complete non-shooting big in there at all times. It's just
clogging up his area on top
exactly.
of that.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like it would be one thing if Adams is a guy that you could, you know, camp in the corner or spread it out up top, but he can't even do, you know, he can't even do that consistently. And you know what, Steven Adams, I have nothing against, you know, the guy. I actually like him as a player, but yeah, really, he's just not being put in positions to succeed right now.
Yeah,
and that really is on Stan.
Yeah, and the other thing with this team that is fascinating to me is the constant Lonzo Ball trade rumors. It still keeps coming out that teams are after him and maybe they don't want to pay. The only thing I can gather, we've talked about it on here a few times, is that they don't want to pay him maybe because he's going to ask for more than maybe they think he's worth. But to me, this team becomes substantially worse if they move on from Lonzo. If anything, Lonzo's been their best defensive player this year. And the evolution of that guy's jump shot is like nothing I've ever seen. He's arguably their best shooter too, outside of JJ, who doesn't play anymore.
Lonzo's shooting 39% from deep this year.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and like you said, he is their best, you know, best defender, best, you know, defender at the point of attack, best defender. He's their most versatile, you know, honestly, one of their more versatile players. I recognize he's never going to be that guy that everyone loves, and especially since all of the hype, you know, coming in and he's got the Lakers stink on him. And when I say Lakers stink, I'm saying from every other fan base and every, yeah. You know, like, you know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but, you know, he's a very good player. And, you know, for the life of me, I can't understand why they want to move him. I get maybe, you know, they're looking, okay, you know, we paid BI, we're going to end up having to pay Zion. Can we afford to pay him, you know, what he's going to ask? And if that's the case, and if they've already had those conversations behind closed doors and he's already said like it's going to be 15 or 20, then I get it. But outside of that, you know, I would be trying to build around those three players. I would absolutely be trying to build around those three players. And to your point at the start of this conversation, I actually thought coming in, I was like, okay, they picked up Bledsoe. You know, yes, they'll eventually run Zion at the five. This is going to be a running team. I see no reason why, if you've got Lonzo in the lineup and Zion on the court, and BI, he knows how to fill a lane, and Bledsoe, these players, it doesn't make sense to be running, you know, like, you know, traditional half court sets. Right. This should be a running team.
Yeah,
and, I think and Lonzo should be part of that.
Absolutely. I don't think maybe they see something in Kyra Lewis Jr. that they drafted that we don't see yet. I don't know. That was a, I think he was a first round pick. He's a point guard, which is a, you know, it's a weird pick if you're going to pay big money to a point guard, but I'm with you. I think people probably think I'm crazy when I say this, but he's at 23. I think Lonzo's trending towards becoming a top 10 point guard at some point, like because of the way he's evolved his shot. He's the I say this about LaMelo a lot too, but like they both now, they're like the perfect thing that you want from a point guard in the NBA. Like the, as much as I love the Dame Lillard's in Steph, even though Steph's a totally different thing, you rarely win a title building around a point guard. What, what you need a point from a point guard is they got to be able to shoot. They got to be able to essentially quarterback the offense, and they got to be a dog defensively. And Lonzo, the way he's shooting the ball now, he checks all the boxes, and he's 6'7", so he can switch. He can play off the ball now that he can shoot. Like he's getting to that him. He's getting in that like where Brogdon is. He might not ever be the scorer that Brogdon is, but that type of point guard, which is to me perfect for the NBA. So if you have to pay him, overpay him a little bit to keep him in New Orleans, you got to pay the guy.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir, my man. Like, if I got a point guard that's shooting 40% from deep and I can put him on ones, twos, and even some threes, that's not a guy I'm trying to leave. That's not a guy I'm trying to get out of, you know, get rid of.
Yeah.
Just ask him.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, before we talk, I want to finish up with the Hawks. But before we talk about the Hawks, I would be remiss if I didn't bring up from tonight the Bam Adebayo dunk, which I don't know how I talked about the Heat without bringing that up. I'm not sure if you saw it, but it's the dunk of the year.
Who did he get?
He got Sabonis, and they called an offensive foul and it got challenged and they reversed it. He took off left foot. He took off his left foot from the dotted line and dunked over Sabonis. It was like Michael Jordan in Space Jam style, stretching the arm all the way out. It was, I know a lot of people thought Anthony Edwards' dunk might have been the dunk of the year, but you'd be hard pressed to convince me that Bam's dunk is not.
So as he described it, I pulled it up. Yeah, that was pretty nasty. You know, and no shade to Jackson Hayes. I don't know if you saw it. He got somebody tonight.
Yeah, too. He did. Like
he cocked it back. But yeah, that was nasty.
And the way he you could see like his right leg, he kind of uses Sabonis a little bit and steps on like his hip almost, and it propels him a little more. You see that?
He does the Tom Chambers to Mark Jackson. Okay.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
I closed it by accident, but I'll check it out afterwards. Yeah, no, that's. I'm always here for the dunk of the night. Dunk of the night, dunk of the year, you know, across the board.
It's going to be hard to beat that one because when you look at the replay where he took off from is wild. That's a crazy dunk.
That's nasty.
All right, let's finish up we usually try to hit the biggest stories from the weekend. And I think it's worth talking about the Hawks real quick because they've now won 8 in a row. They haven't lost since Nate McMillan became their head coach. They're actually 10-1 with Nate as their head coach this year because he coached 3 games when Lloyd Pierce was out for the birth of his child. Are you ready? Are you buying the Hawks as having turned it around, or are you still a little skeptical because their schedule in these 8 games has been very easy? And then this last win against the Lakers was obviously with LeBron being hurt.
So I was in on the Hawks going in. I was one of those folks that's like, yeah, this is going to be
before the season.
I think a lot of people were high on him. And this is the thing, like, it sucks for Lloyd Pierce. End of the day, if it's not the right fit, if the star player, you know, is not necessarily in your corner, and I'm not blaming that on Trey, but I'm saying they don't make that move if the star is not on board with it. It's not going to work. But what stinks is, coinciding kind of with, you know, McMillan, whom I'm also a fan of and also got a raw deal at the end of last year.
I talk about it all the time on here. Never should have been fired in the first place. So I'm kind of happy for him, even though it sucks for Lloyd. You know, it's good to see Nate getting his chance again.
But and good for him. And you know, it doesn't hurt that all of a sudden they have Bogdanovich back and Gallinari looks strong and everybody's kind of, you know, healthy and looking good. And sometimes it really is just a matter of a different voice in the room. So I'm hopeful for them, you know, like, selfishly self-serving, I would like to see them make the postseason so that my co-host doesn't ridicule me because we were in disagreement on that.
Interesting.
But I do think they have enough. They're still, you know, they're actually right back in the mix now. Mm-hmm. Let's see, matter. Woof. They're, and I know it's a log jam, but they're actually a four seed right now. You know, with that winning streak, they're in the four seed. Yeah. I would love to see. I don't know if they necessarily hold on to a home court situation, but I'd love to see them make a postseason run this year.
When we'll definitely learn. We talked about this last week before that Laker game. That was the first game of an 8-game West Coast trip, and they play the Clippers, the Suns,
the Kings, the Warriors, the Nuggets.
This is a tough little stretch they got. They're probably lucky that they pulled out a win in the first game because it's going to be tough to string together wins on this trip. To your point about guys getting healthy, here's the reason why the Lloyd Pierce situation kind of pissed me off when it happened was that at the beginning of the year, even though they weren't great, they were winning games with their defense. They were a top 10 defense in the NBA for a long stretch. And then DeAndre Hunter got hurt. And I think low key people don't realize that's the guy in Atlanta. I don't think people realize it. That kid was averaging 18 a game and he was their best wing defender. He was starting to look like a legit high level wing player in the NBA. And they went on a huge losing streak and they were struggling big time when he went out. And obviously they had other injuries too, but I think that impacted that team in a huge way that didn't get talked about. And then it got compounded by, you know, reports that John Collins and Trae Young are in the locker room. And I got to imagine the reason why they want to trade Sean Collins so bad is that Trae Young doesn't like him either. And I'm going to tell you what, man, I interviewed Travis Schlenk a couple years ago and coming from Golden State and listening to him talking like this guy knows his shit. He's going to build a good team. But if they're just going to make every decision based on what Trae Young wants, they're going to be in trouble. I like Trae Young. Trae Young's a good player, but come on, man. I mean, is he that guy? He's not that guy.
I was going to go there for you. He's not the guy that, you know, you're bending over everywhere for, like bending over backwards in every single way for. I understand you're Atlanta. It's, you know, it's your guy. You want to put a winning team around him. You want to appease him and all of that. But I have to be honest with you. While I'm a Trae Young fan, he has not been that, you know, his play has not warranted that this year. And for whatever the reason is, whether it's just not comfortable, whether there was an issue with Pierce, whether it's like, you know, maybe he's not vibing well with Collins or whatever the case may be. If I'm them, I start to make moves in the best interest of the roster, in the best interest of the franchise. And, you know, and some of those moves will be in his favor, but you don't have to bend over completely backwards for him, especially if, you know. Yeah, you know, let me not go there.
Hey, you can go there. This is an open forum where we talk about all teams in the NBA here. So but you don't have to. I don't understand the John Collins stuff. There was a report today that they offered the T-Wolves John Collins for Malik Beasley in a first round pick. And the T-Wolves said no, which I don't understand from either side. It seems wild to me. I might be higher on John Collins than others, but he's one of those guys who's been very good in Atlanta. And I think in the right situation could flourish to become even better. And Malik Beasley is good, but he's not that good. Like what are we talking about here?
Well, what I was going to ask you is, what do you think the ideal fit for Collins is? Because this is something that I've talked about with Josh, like over the last year or so, he's a big Collins guy as well. I've been searching for the ideal fit, and I actually don't necessarily know where it is. Maybe it's just that I haven't watched him enough or focused in on him enough.
I actually think he fits next to any big, and I also think he can play small ball five if you need him to. He's so versatile, and his athleticism is on a different level. Yeah. He's spring loaded, as my co-host would say. Like he's got that athleticism where he can switch. He can guard one through five. He's a decent shooter. He's a good enough 3-point shooter to where you have to guard him and respect him. Mm-hmm. And he does a little bit of everything. I don't know that, like, you don't want him to be a 25 a night guy for you, but like, man, him and Karl Anthony Towns next to each other talk. I mean, that is an athletic, talented, skilled front court. But also if you have, you know, a non-shooting big, that's like, if you had a, like, for example, if you say, let's put him next to a Rudy Gobert type, like you could put, do that too. And then he's a guy who stretches the floor. Like, I think he kind of fits. He should hypothetically fit wherever. And honestly, he fits in Atlanta, right? Like him and Capella have been really good next to each other. They haven't been the problem. You know, they have not been the problem. So it's just, it's a weird thing to me. And when you mentioned how, you know, Trey had to be a part of Lloyd being out, I got to think in the back of my mind that Trey might be a little bit of the reason why they are so strongly. This John Collins thing, the rumors of them wanting to move on from John Collins have been going on all year. And I think part of it was because he didn't sign his extension and he wants more money again. Mm-hmm. But his if you look at his numbers compared to other bigs in the league, from an efficiency standpoint, he's been right up there near the top for his position. But I don't know. I think he kind of fits wherever.
Next to Bam would be interesting.
Oh, Miami.
That would be nice. That's,
Heat Twitter has been calling for that one.
My bad. I missed.
Well, here's the thing. And you know how it is with team Twitters, right? When you're a team that's in the mix for potentially making moves, every time you play a team, you're like, oh, he would be good. He'd be good. And I do that too, because on the podcast with Norris, every week I'm like, all right, here's who we played this week. I'm like, oh, this guy would be nice. Oh, he would be good. Nah, he'd be good. And then every time there's a rumor like, oh, John Collins, everyone, especially in Miami, people are like, oh, Pat will get it done. Riley will get it done. But I don't think Collins will be the one. That, I don't know, man. It's impossible to know. I, for a while, was thinking that this trade deadline was going to be quiet. But now I don't know, man, because it doesn't seem like teams want to spend a ton of money because of this situation this season. But I don't think any like superstars are getting moved, but it does seem like there might be some interesting like three or four team trades potentially going on just to make the pieces all work.
With like I think I alluded to earlier, when LeBron went down, that it, at the very least, had to open the door for folks. So to open people's eyes, go like, hey, if we're right there, we can get there. If we're just on the outside, hey, we can get into the mix. Yeah. So I kind of think we're going to get, you know, some deals, maybe not superstars, you know, no disrespect, Kyle Lowry, because I do think he's going to be moved. But, you know, guys of that level, even, I do think we could.
Well, and that the LeBron combined with just Brooklyn, it's just, if you're in the East and you think you have a chance, you have to build to beat that team right now. And that's where you see Milwaukee going and getting PJ Tucker. Miami goes and gets Trevor Ariza, who hasn't played in a year. So, you know, we'll see how good he actually is for them. And that's why it seems as though if you're at one, you're like a team like Miami or a Boston where you want to keep your young guys, you got to make, you got to, if you want to compete now to beat Brooklyn, you got to load up. You got to figure out a way to load up.
I was going to throw one more shot. I was going to say, or if you're Boston, you almost did it or you'll almost do it. But I'll leave that alone.
Listen. I crush them. I crush Danny Ainge on this show pretty constantly.
Almost Ainge.
Fascinating to me that he still runs an NBA team at this point, because the idea that you could go back to back Eastern Conference Finals, have a 22 year old and a 23 year old who are probably top 15 players already in the league, top 20 at the least, and you can constantly regress every year. And then somehow it gets blamed on Brad Stevens. Like Brad Stevens can't coach anymore or something. It's like, what's happening? How do people not crush Danny Ainge more?
And you're losing talent for nothing.
Yeah.
You were like in consecutive years, repeatedly, they continue, you know, folks are walking away and they're not actually even getting anything for him. Anyhow,
we're
on the same page.
Look, I talk about this. I mention this probably more than people want to hear it, because I say it all the time when we're talking about these teams, because I say it about OKC. Right? Because I don't know where you feel on this one, but I've always thought Sam Presti was one of the most overrated executives in the NBA. And I'll say this to me, there's three things to building a team, right? You know, this draft, free agency, trades. You have to win two of the three to have a successful team.
Yep.
You can't. And so like, if you're OKC, for example, you can't just keep drafting players and losing every trade because no free agents are coming there. So you're never going to win free agency. So you got to win every trade. They don't win trades. They lose their trades. And they're a decent draft. I mean, they were great over a decade ago at drafting, and the rest of their draft picks have been okay. They've been fine. Boston, they hit home runs with these guys. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, even their picks, mm-hmm. these guys this year. I love Peyton. I think Peyton Pritchard's a good player. Yeah. Nesmith will probably be pretty good. But
he's a rotation guy.
But you look at their roster from 3 years ago when they were in the Eastern Conference Finals, mm-hmm. Terry Rozier looked pretty damn good. Al Horford can still play. They've never been the same since they got rid of Horford. They let Gordon Hayward walk because they don't want to pay him. And now he's having a career year other than, I mean, he's regressed a little since his injury. So, you know, maybe, and free agents don't want to go to Boston either. I mean, I think that's a misconception that people want to be in Boston. They don't really want to be in Boston.
And don't forget, everyone remembers how you did Isaiah. Everyone also saw how you dogged Kyrie and said it was all about him, when in reality it didn't help. But no, he was not the root of your problems.
Yep. And
I'm not even a huge fan of like a lot of stuff that Kyrie has done over the last 4 or 5 years. Yeah. But that wasn't that. They tried to make it seem like it was all him, and I'm sorry, it wasn't.
And there were starting to be rumors earlier in the year that he might do the same to Kemba. And if you do that to Kemba, now people are actually going to turn on you because everyone loves Kemba.
The fact that the fact that his name was in all those early rumors, that lets you know they were trying to do that.
Yeah. Yep.
They were actively trying to.
Yep. And now there's like the one, I think it was an executive who said like Danny Ainge won't pull the trigger on a trade unless he thinks he's going to crush you, which is hilarious to me because he hasn't won a trade. Yeah. He hasn't won a trade.
Okay, so that's why he's almost Ainge, and that's the reason why in a couple years we're going to be speaking of this as like lost opportunities, because all of a sudden, you know, your youngins that are really good are going to be kind of coming up.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
My prediction is that Jason Tatum does not sign another contract with him. I could be wrong, but we shall see.
Wow, that would be interesting, and that wouldn't be shocking. It wouldn't be overly shocking the way that teams regress. That's interesting. I haven't heard that one before. I like that.
That's just me. I'm not.
It's interesting. I have to do that on the show a lot too, where I'm like, I haven't heard this from anybody.
Because
I feel like in the past I've had a tendency to say these things, and then 2 years later I'm like, you remember when I said that? And I'm like, no, you didn't. No, I did. Uh-huh. But you know.
Oh yeah.
Cool. Well, Jabari, man, this is super fun, man. I really appreciate you jumping on with me, guys. It's Dunks and Discourse. If you're not already listening, go ahead and check it out. Go follow Jabari on Twitter. He's one of the OGs of the NBA Twitter game. He's been doing it since before it was the cesspool that it has somewhat become. I've been also very late to the Twitter game because when I was in the league, I was like, I'm not going to be on Twitter when I was working. After I left the NBA, I was working for CBS Sports as a behind the scenes. I was a producer. So I was like, I don't need to be tweeting as a producer. And now I'm like, I'm out of both. I'm trying to run this podcast. So like, I guess I got to be on Twitter. This slow build, but I get it. But Jabari's been doing it forever. So
I contributed to making it the cesspool that it is now that we all swim in and enjoy.
Yeah. It's, you know what it is? It's team Twitters that have
started. Oh, no, I know.
That's the thing that I'm still wrapping my head around, because on some days I'm like, this is amazing. I can just dive into some team Twitters. I'm like, this is some of the funniest content I've ever seen because these people are insane. Mm-hmm. And then there are other days where I'm like, I don't want to see this shit. I can't hear these people complaining about their teams and this. And it's just like, come on. It's just not, they're so unrealistic about life.
Yeah, so sometimes it can be like, you know, like like fish in the fridge. You know, after a couple of days, it's like, okay, I've had enough of that. Let's cleanse this. No, I'm there with you. But for the most part, you know, I thoroughly enjoy NBA Twitter. You know, I have a great time with it. Yeah, and again, I really appreciate you inviting me on. This has been a hell of a lot of fun.
Absolutely. All right, man. We'll hopefully we'll see you again soon, everyone. I'll be back tomorrow, and have a good night. We'll see you tomorrow. Later.